I told you.
Benny. Bring me everyone.
What do you mean everyone?
Everyone!
This week is more than meets the eye. Get it? It's episode 18 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Welcome to episode 18 of Cut Print Film. I hope that was the right number. My name's Chris.
My name's Jeff Rollins.
I'm Dave Costell.
I didn't say my last name.
It's Rollins. We all know.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If you listened last week, it's Chris Rollins. Yeah.
Jeff adopted.
They'll know later when we do Evangelista's Lists.
So is that a new series we're going to run?
It's a series no one told me about that we're doing.
You list things.
What audio gifts are we giving our listeners this week?
The gift of gab.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we got a great show for you tonight. We should start saying that, like, on talk shows.
Yeah, this is a great show, everybody. This show is all about robots.
Yeah.
We got a good one coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's not this one, though. He's talking about the Stephen King podcast coming up next week.
That's right.
This week is going to be a dismal show with no content whatsoever.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about next week.
If you enjoy movies with robots in them, go listen to Anti-Fanboy at antifanboy.com.
That's right. They are three robots that do a podcast.
It's like Mystery Science Theater, but with comics. This week we're going to start with a film called Pacific Rim, which is not a new film, but recently this week it was announced that Pacific Rim 2 is finally happening. So if you're new to our podcast,
Revenge of the Rim.
Yeah, is that the subtitle? Revenge of the Rim.
Yeah, Revenge of the Rim. If you're new to the podcast, we are three non-fans of Pacific Rim. But
this rim don't run.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, how we hate this movie.
We didn't talk about the movie per se, we just mentioned that we don't like it.
I didn't talk about it because I just watched Pacific Rim today.
Jeff caught up today.
For the podcast, a little show prep, if you will.
Yes.
And I would like to share how I caught up with this film.
Right.
I downloaded or I bought it on iTunes. I actually paid for this.
You did?
You poor man.
With my own money, my own hard-earned money. I work out in those fields. Mowing grass all day long, and in my blue jeans,
and nothing else.
Yes,
I almost started singing Out Here in the Fields, or whatever that song's called. It's not called that.
Nope.
Teenage Wasteland.
It's not called Bob
O'Reilly. There we go. So I bought this movie and watched it while ironing shirts and pants.
Oh,
yes, because I figured, listen, I have to do this ironing anyway. I've worn every single outfit I own to work.
So you were pressing some pants.
Yeah, I was doing some adult
some ties.
No, I don't wear ties to work because I work with some people that don't dress as nicely as I do, and I don't want to really force that issue.
Right.
So I don't want to make anybody feel bad about themselves. So I just dress business casually. So there I am, pressing my shirts and pants, and I figure, you know what? This is the worst thing I've ever done. I should enhance this a little bit and watch Pacific Rim for the show.
It's a good movie to press pants to.
Yeah. So that's what I did. I stood there in the living room ironing my shirts and pants and watching, I think his name is Charlie Hunnam.
Sons
of Anarchy.
Sure, let's go with it.
Jax Teller
with an X.
Play in a robot.
Yeah.
He plays inside a robot.
He gets in a robot and he plays some games.
And I was actually hoping this would be a fun movie.
Right. I don't
kind of like, you know, just
I don't think anyone went into Pacific Rim thinking it would be great, but they wanted, or I know I wanted something fun.
Yeah.
And so Jeff, the movie is freshest for you. Mm-hmm. Is it a fun movie? What is Pacific Rim? Tell us.
I wanted to have fun watching this really badly. I didn't. And I think it's because, to borrow a term from you, Chris, that you used for your Sabotage review, this movie is aggressively dumb. Like, this, it's almost insulting as an adult watching this.
Right.
It's definitely designed for, like, 12 to 13-year-olds
in mind,
which I think is the target audience.
And right.
Yeah. For that, okay, this movie succeeds.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
For everybody else, this does not work. My major gripe, I have zero grapes with this film, by the way.
No grapes for Pacific Rim.
My major gripe is that everything you see happen on screen is being narrated in the dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
They are just doing a running commentary as you see things happen.
Right.
This is exposition, the motion picture.
Right. The problem with Pacific Rim, one of the problems with Pacific Rim is...
It is. The dialogue's like, there's a robot punching a robot. Oh my God, it's a kaiju punching a robot.
They tried to build all this complex mythology for the film, but they didn't know how to present it. Uh-uh. So they just literally just have the character say it. And it's just... I'm so tired. I hate... Man of Steel is another movie that did this for characters just say what they are.
And
like,
I think that...
You're the best Jaeger pilot. Like, oh, thanks. That's all your character development you need. Just saying he's the best.
That works very well in comic books.
Right.
I like that in comic books.
Yeah, because...
Are they called Jaegers in this?
They are called Jaegers.
Is there enough fucking Jaeger?
The robots are Jaegers. The aliens are... The kaiju.
They are kaiju, our favorite word here at Cutthroat Film.
And also, like, the premise of the film makes no sense because it's like we have this program that we built to fight these things off. It's working.
Right.
Let's defund it and build a wall. Right?
Yeah.
That's the premise of the movie, right?
Yeah, sure.
Is that supposed to be, like, some commentary on bureaucratic incompetence?
I guess so, that, you know.
Because it fucking sucked.
Or is it supposed to be like rah-rah military worship type thing? Like where it's better to fight than it is to, you know, build that wall or build a dome or whatever it is you're doing to defend yourself?
I think
Reagan's Star Wars program.
I think all this is giving Pacific Rim too much credit. I think it's just while we're making the movie, they said, we need a conflict. The conflict is they're going to build a wall and shut down the Jaeger program.
And the thing, the movie is filled with like... Good actors just slumming it.
Oh, we've talked about in the past how Idris Elba. Is that how you say his name? I say Idris.
I say everything wrong.
I say Stringer Bell.
He is a phenomenal actor who has probably the worst agent in Hollywood.
Yeah, he ought to.
Does Diego got bodies on him? that's Michael K. Williams.
Yeah, that's a different guy from The Wire. He's a great actor, and he just gets these terrible roles and. This is a character who you can tell on paper they thought, this guy's going to be the ultimate badass. And in the movie, he's just bland and his nose bleeds. That's his big character trait.
He's over the top. And like, not in a good way. Thing,
there is no bottom to this movie. Everything's over the top.
Yeah. And it's like, you get lambasted for being too serious about this movie, but it's not fun. In the way that people say it is.
It's
like,
not.
It's almost like they force it into that.
That's what I think it is. Yeah. They're trying to force a fun experience on you.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. Edge of Tomorrow is a fun experience.
Right.
That is similar in, you know, tone.
Right. I always feel like I'm missing something because a lot of people love this movie.
Yeah. And people we respect love this
movie. Yeah. And when
as opposed to people we don't respect.
Yeah, it's not just, you know...
Like you, Don, my stepdad. You're not my real dad. I won't mow the lawn. You can't tell me what to do.
When
I'm hanging my corn poster on the outside of the door.
So, when Pacific Rim 2 was announced, I won't say everyone, but a vocal majority of... The intranet went wild saying, oh, yes, Pacific Rim 2. I'm so excited. And I don't get it. And even when Pacific Rim came out, I saw several critics calling it the Star Wars of our generation.
Oh, my God.
Which makes me want to take my dick out and throw it at them. My dick's detachable. So I just take it off and I throw it at these people. And it comes back to me like a boomerang.
That's pretty impressive.
I know.
I didn't know you were from the Outback.
It's a weird thing I have. Anyway,
I'll have the Aussie fries and...
the Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah, please.
And Chris's detachable dick.
So my experience with Pacific Rim was... I saw the trailers, and I immediately formed the opinion that it would be bad.
I did, too. I don't know.
Because that's how I am.
Yeah.
But then people I know...
At least you gave it a chance.
People I know and people whose reviews I respect... went and saw it, and they reviewed it and said it was the bee's knees.
Right, yeah. Literal quote, the bee's knees.
And then people were like, you got to... Friends of mine were seeing it twice in the theater, and I resisted. I was like, no, I'm not fucking seeing it. And then finally when we moved in here, we wanted to like kind of make the basement like a cool movie zone, right?
Right, yeah.
So it was the first movie we watched down here. Halfway through it, my wife got up, walked upstairs, closed the door,
took the divorce papers out of the drawer, signed them,
and we
filed them with Dave's lawyer.
We've literally never watched a movie down here since.
Wow.
Pacific Rim ruined your cool movie.
Right? But it made this podcast possible.
Because it's such a bad movie, and she was hanging in there, and I'm just looking over like, I don't like this either. I'm not a fan of what's his name, Hellboy.
Guillermo del Toro?
No, Ron Perlman.
Oh,
I like him.
In that movie, I mean.
Oh, no, he's terrible.
He's awful.
He's not terrible. The character's terrible.
Yeah, that character is useless.
And the like we said, the dialogue for every single character is the pits.
Yeah.
It is just...
It is not the bee's knees.
No.
Or the cat's meow.
It's the bee's behind. Yeah, Dave, you told me just not to watch this movie at all if I wanted to preserve my marriage. My wife went out of the house today. I was like, all right, I'm going to do some ironing, and I will watch this movie without my wife in the house.
Sounds like a good Sunday, except for the movie part.
Yes.
The ironing sounds great.
Did she come home at any point and catch a glimpse of it?
No. In fact, I don't even think until she's listened to this podcast, she has no idea I even watched it, and I don't want to speak of it in the house.
I'd rather watch a movie about Jeff pressing his pants than rewatch Pacific Rim at this point.
I pictured Jeff in his undies, like with a...
Yeah, with like garter belts on, like garter socks that like...
It was the worst. I mean... I think I pressed like 12 pairs of pants and 40 shirts. I told you, I wore everything. I had no more clothes.
See, that sounds more thrilling than Pacific Rim 2. All those shirts, is he going to get them done? One big thing that fans of this movie like to point out is the character of Mako Mori, the female character in the film. They point her out as a strong female character. So much so that fans of this film have developed something called the Mako Mori test as... sort of a counterpart
like the
to the Bechdel test, which is...
It's like the SATs.
Yeah. The Bechdel test is basically your film has to have two female characters who talk about something other than the male lead character, which a lot of films fail at because most movies are written by men. So that's going to happen. So the Mako Mori test, I have it up, I brought it up here. So the Mako Mori test says, the Mako Mori test is passed if the movie has at least one female character who gets her own narrative arc that is not about supporting a man's story.
Fail.
Which, right off the bat, this test fails its own namesake.
Yeah.
So, yes, Mako Mori has her own narrative arc in the film, but her existence in this film revolves around both the Jax Teller character and Idris Elba's character. So, right off the bat, it fucking fails exactly what they're setting out to say.
This test ought to be just thrown out.
Yeah, I don't get why this happened anyways.
And, like, isn't the whole movie she's being...
saved.
Like suppressed by Idris Elba, he won't let her do anything.
Right, and when she's not doing that, she's spying on Jax Teller as he takes his shirt off, like through peepholes.
Through a peephole. Yeah, like
there's literally a scene where she peeks through a peephole, and Jax Teller takes it. He's got his shirt off. And he's wearing like a towel out of the shower.
But they do mind meld.
Oh yeah, that was the other thing in this movie that I just did not give two fucks about. They kept bringing it up, and I was like, it has no bearing on the film. Where two Jaeger pilots, they gotta have a great mental side. Like, who fucking... Can they just get in the fucking robots and fight the monsters?
Which, by the way, looked great. The movie looks fantastic.
Oh, visually, it's great.
Visual element. Yeah.
Yeah. But you need more. You need some sort of...
Well, yeah.
You can't... I know film is a visual medium, but you need something else. You can't just make it look good.
This podcast is suffering a Robert Frost moment here. We got two ways we can go. We can go Snowpiercer because it's a movie like that tries to fit. It fits the same tone as Pacific Rim successfully.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or we can talk about Transformers.
Let's do both. We can do both
at the same time. All right, you talk Transformers.
So I'll talk about Transformers.
Right, so there's a train.
Transformers are about robots and they transform it.
This isn't working. Right immediately, this is not working.
All right, let's... What do we want to start with?
Tell us about Transformers.
All right, so I took the bullet for the team, and I watched T4.
My God.
Transformers Age of Extinction. And so my review will be up tomorrow.
Are the Transformers extinct?
No. So right off the bat, that title is a misnomer.
So on our scale of 1 to 10, what would you give Mark Wahlberg's triceps?
I give those... 10 out of 10.
How many seps out of 3?
They're impressive.
Try.
They're impressive seps. But the movie is terrible. So at this point, you know what you're getting with the Transformers series, and that's a problem. I've seen a lot of people defend the Transformer movies in general by saying, you're thinking too much about it. And that's the most apathetic bullshit response to a fucking movie I've ever heard in my life.
It's very similar to what people say about Pacific Rim.
Yeah, to the point...
I think they're one and the same.
To the point that it makes me angry, where people are just like, I don't go to these movies for art. You know what? Fuck yourself.
Here's my dick.
Yeah, here's my detachable dick.
Here's my dick. I just got very upset.
That's upsetting, yeah.
No, Chris was throwing his dick.
I didn't bring any antiseptic.
This was it hitting them in the forehead.
But this movie is just... I never thought a movie with robot dinosaurs could be boring, but man, Michael Bay fucking proved me wrong, because this is a dull, lifeless movie, and it's endless. It just goes on.
It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, am I correct?
Yeah, it's almost a 3 hour movie.
Why
you don't
on
need
earth
that.
Are we making 2 hour and 40 minute Transformers movies?
So, I took a shitload of I take notes when I watch stuff, but with Transformers 4, I took a shitload of notes just because. Mm-hmm. Everything stupid I had to write down.
Let me set this easel up.
So, but I won't go through them all. But the one thing that I think perfectly sums up this movie and Michael Bay's...
So there's a train in the snow, right? And they're going for...
All
right,
Chris Evans plays
this. This is the final point on Transformers. So this,
no, I'm just kidding.
This is the one line... This is two lines that perfectly set up Michael Bay's fucking mindset and just the mindset of people who love these fucking movies. So... Yeah. Mark Wahlberg, he plays a inventor. His name is Cade Yeager, which no
What's
one
he, invent?
He invents all this. He's like the character's dad from Gremlins. He's always inventing goofy bullshit that doesn't work.
Junk.
Like he
he's
invents
a junk inventor.
He
invents a robot dog, and he has a robot butler that brings you a beer from the fridge.
Oh, like Pauly's robot.
Yeah, it's like Pauly's robot from Rocky.
Although Billy Pelsler's dad invented the fucking Keurig in Gremlins.
Oh, that's true.
And now people use them every day.
He doesn't get that credit.
That's true, but that pocket
dildo.
Whatever the hell
pussy.
That... No, it wasn't
pocket pussy.
It was that thing that like had a toothbrush and nail clippers on it.
Yeah.
That was a hunk of shit.
The, fuck, what's it called?
I don't know.
I figured
it's called the pocket pussy. Yeah. Anyway, so, Mark Wahlberg's character, he's an inventor, and for the first 5 hours of the movie, he's all into inventions... And he has a line at one point where his daughter, who is a just pain in the ass, she basically hates her father because he doesn't have enough money, which is a great character right there. You're the daughter that hates her dad because he doesn't have money.
He can't buy her more short shorts.
Yeah, pretty much. So she says, don't you think there are some things that shouldn't be invented? And he goes, no, that's stupid thinking. I'm an inventor, blah, 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 blah. Then... Halfway through the movie...
Like gas chambers?
Yeah, I was just thinking of
well,
concentration
the,
camps.
At the Maybe end of the movie, Mark Wahlberg has a line where he screams, there are some things that shouldn't be invented.
Does
so,
everyone laugh?
No.
Oh.
So Mark Wahlberg's character arc in this movie is he goes from an enlightened person to a close-minded person.
Right. That's the, turned into a Hittite.
That's the character arc for fucking a Michael Bay movie, where a guy starts out as an inventor, and at the end of the movie, he's like, fuck inventing. So that's
good.
That perfectly sums up Michael Bay's...
Does he say, I am become death.
Yes.
Destroyer of Transformers.
Destroyer of workout machines.
It's just, it's a bad movie.
Is there a scene where somebody gets in a car and then it transforms and blood seeps from the
pores? Oh, that'd be fantastic.
No, but there are a lot of scenes where characters are in cars and the cars change how they look. Like Bumblebee goes from looking like an old Camaro to the new
like
sexy Camaro. Yeah.
I don't have time for this movie.
There's a lot of... There's jokes about slavery, because that's always funny.
Yeah, it's good lighthearted humor.
Yeah, people love joking about slavery.
Okay, so this made $100 million this weekend.
Yeah, yeah, which is shocking, because this thing was eviscerated critically. Critics eviscerated this thing.
I touch on it in my review that basically Michael Bay is critic-proof at this point.
I guess so.
I don't know anyone who likes these movies. Whereas Pacific Rim has its defenders, I don't know anyone who loves Transformers. They make money constantly.
What was it? The Death of the Human Spirit was one of the reviews of the movie.
who titled the review that?
I think that was Devin from Badass Digest.
Yeah, it was something like that. It's just, it's an atrocious movie. It's offensive to people who like movies. So, Transformers, 10 out of 10.
All right, moving on.
$100 million.
That is just shot. What did Snowpiercer make?
It made $5.
It only opened in 10 theaters this weekend.
Yeah,
that's a slow rollout.
Yeah,
then.
As a complete contrast to Transformers, we have another sci-fi movie in limited release this weekend called Snowpiercer.
But we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we all really enjoyed it.
Did we talk about it?
Yeah.
I didn't
watch
it.
Very briefly.
I just watched it this week.
Okay.
But Transformers kind of tries to exist in the real world, right? Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I would say that.
Whereas Pacific Rim and Snowpiercer aren't following the same laws.
Yeah, they're very different.
Yeah, they set their own
slightly,
universe.
They're almost like anime turned.
Well, certainly Snowpiercer, because Snowpiercer is actually inspired by an anime.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Guillermo del Toro is obsessed with anime.
Or no, it's inspired by a manga. Is that the book?
Yeah.
I'm always bad at that.
That's the one with the tits in it, though.
Oh, yeah, the one with the tentacle rings.
And all the pubes are blurred out.
Okay.
You can see them.
You got to keep it hot.
Anyway, I will delve into that too much.
Please don't.
Right, stick around for the second half of the show when we delve into it hard.
Yeah.
But Snowpiercer is fun in that same way where it feels like a video game kind of because they're moving through levels.
Yeah, Snowpiercer, it's kind of like Gravity, the movie Gravity, how it was just from one problem to a next,
right.
And it just keeps going and going. That's sort of what Snowpiercer is.
But I like what you're saying about how it definitely did feel like a video game,
yeah.
Where you're leveling up each card.
There's nice pauses.
Yeah, and there's different
levels.
Situations you have to get yourself out of.
There's different bosses in each level.
Exactly.
For if you haven't seen it yet, or if you haven't read my brilliant review,
yeah, it was fantastic. On
cutprintfilm.com. The basic plot of Snowpiercer is it's sometime in the future, basically because of global warming, the world is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And
who plays the snowman in this?
Let it go.
So the last survivors of Earth basically are on this train called the Snowpiercer, and the train is constantly in motion, and each car of the train is broken up into class systems. Sort of like the Titanic.
Chris, everything's constantly in motion.
That's right.
Haven't you ever taken
We're moving
physics
right
class?
Now. Go on now.
Don't blow my mind, guys. So on the train.
Blow two things at once.
At the very back. Good night, everyone.
No one feels good about themselves now.
At the back of the train is the lower class. And the lower class is trying to get to the front of the train. So that's your plot right there.
Yeah. It's essentially a caste system set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be a more metaphorical version of a caste system.
And I would even argue that the class stuff in the film is heavy-handed, but it works. It's very heavy.
Wearing a metal glove.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your face feels a little bruised when you're done watching it.
Yeah.
Especially the fucking end scene.
But I don't think these movies are necessarily required to be subtle.
Right. It's
That said, Pacific Rim could have been a little more subtle.
See, so that brings me to my next question. Why do you think a movie like Snowpiercer, which isn't subtle, works, whereas something like Transformers or Pacific Rim doesn't? Do you think it's just the filmmaker? Do you think it's just the way it's made? I mean,
the non-subtleties are divvied out a little more sparingly in Snowpiercer.
Right.
Snowpiercer is an original idea we haven't seen done on the screen yet.
Yeah. I
That's
I,
what makes it work. We've seen, for the last 10 years, we've been watching robots punch each other.
Right.
So to build your narrative arc around those huge scenes, and that's also why Godzilla doesn't work for me, because it wasn't fresh. You know, as the scenes in between are the important parts, and in Snowpiercer, those scenes
in between are fantastic.
Are great.
Yeah,
they're good actors,
right?
Pulling out good moments, even though there's cheesy dialogue and stuff. The performances, like Tilda Swinton, she's fucking amazing.
I love her. I love her all
and
the time.
And she's over the top, but this is actually fun.
Right,
over the top.
You enjoy watching
because you don't know what this character is going to say next.
Right.
Whereas in Pacific Rim, you know every beat.
Right.
You know what's coming around the corner.
And you made a comment about Pacific Rim where the mythology is very forced in your face. It's almost done as heavy. In Snowpiercer, where they're just like the train.
But it works somehow. It's weird.
Because there's those little things like the sentencing of putting someone's arm out.
Yeah. There's a lot of little stuff in Snowpiercer that I loved. Like, I love how the characters have this way of calling things extinct. Like, there's a part where someone's like, cigarettes have been extinct. Like, I love that. I thought that was a nice, cool touch. Like, I don't know.
And the seven, like,
Yeah, like the way they talk about the Seven, and it's like on a video, and the video is cheesy in that classroom or whatever.
And then you see them, like, there's sentinels out there frozen in the snow. Like, little things like that were really cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you start to dissect the movie, logically, things don't make sense.
Right.
Like,
no, but...
like, how big are these fucking cars? Yeah. Some of them go on for miles, and then other ones are like, you could see from one end to the other.
But I don't know. It's just
as far as like the mythology of Snowpiercer goes, they kind of divvy out bits and pieces of it as the film goes along.
Right, you
and
learn
they do it cleverly.
Yeah.
Whereas in Pacific Rim, it's nonstop mythology building.
Yeah.
It never ends from the first frame of the film to the last frame. The world building never ends.
Yeah.
And they're just explaining this. They're explaining that. The title card for Pacific Rim doesn't even show up until 15 minutes into the movie. There's 15 minutes of exposition before we even get the name of the movie.
Right.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That can be cool sometimes, but not in Pacific Rim.
It's cool if it happens on like a cool beat. Like
the
scene before the credit is cool. Whereas Pacific Rim is just like, has the movie fucking started yet? Oh, I guess not, because we're just at the title.
I forgot that we hadn't seen the title card already. It had been 15 full minutes. It's nuts.
But I wasn't... for as much as I liked Snowpiercer, I don't think it was as good as people are making it out to be.
Some people are calling this a masterpiece, which I think is a bit much. A bit much.
I liked it less than you, Chris.
I really liked it, but again, I would not call it a masterpiece. That's a bit...
I was listening to something where somebody said... this exact sentence: if it's the best movie of this year, and if it had come out last year, it would have been the best movie last year.
Absolutely incorrect. Absolutely incorrect.
I'll say it's one of the best movies of this year, but not the best.
I would I'd give it a 7.
Really?
That's what I would give it. It was really good.
It was good for an action movie, which is hard to do.
It was fun. I had a lot of fun watching it. It was interesting. I didn't know what was coming at me at any given time. It was a really good movie.
I wasn't thrilled with the ending.
I didn't
like the whole Ed Harris's part. Right.
The ending suffers a bit from over exposition, where it's literally
just won't shut the fuck
a character just telling you everything. Like, all right.
And there was like a twist that I wasn't digging. It was like, what's...
But I think...
I ate babies. There's like, that's a line in the movie.
I know babies taste the best.
Says
Captain America.
Yeah, that piece of dialogue did not work for me at all.
That was bad.
I almost ate my entire blanket I was watching that at home.
I think what it is we get... These days... a quote-unquote complex sci-fi movie is so rare that when it happens, people go nuts.
Yeah, you get your claws in and you won't let go. And so, you try to tell everybody, this is fantastic.
So I think that's sort of why people love this movie so much. And again, it's a great movie, but people are making it to be this greater than it is because it's different. And we get it's so rare to have a different sci-fi movie these days that when it happens, people... say, holy shit, you gotta see this fucking different sci-fi movie.
I was expecting a twist where, as they started working towards the front of the train...
it became the back of the train.
It became
again.
The back of the train,
I was expecting that, too.
Because...
You guys are weird.
I've seen too many Twilight Zone episodes.
It's just, this day and age, you're always looking for the mega twist.
You're always looking for the Megatron.
I'm never looking for Megatron.
No?
Just for your information.
But it was a brutal fucking movie. That scene with all the hatchet guys.
That's my favorite scene in the fucking movie. There's a scene where all these guys all have axes and they have these masks that cover their eyes. It makes it even weirder. And they go through a tunnel and it's pitch black and this insane fight happens. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just really fun comic book style.
That scene
movie
and
making.
The scene in the classroom I fucking love.
Oh, yeah,
with Allison Pill as the teacher who is just insane.
Yep.
Like, she starts out very cheery and overly happy, and she turns into this lunatic.
I didn't see that comic. Like, you get a sense of dread, but I didn't see how they were going to do it. Like, it's a good movie. See Snowpiercer, please. Don't see Transformers 4.
It's unrelenting, too. Like, people just keep dropping.
It's ultra violent.
Yeah. It's a bleak movie. Like, characters you don't expect to die, and they die early in the movie. Like, I didn't expect that character to die so soon. So
if you're keeping score at home, don't see Pacific Rim.
Right.
Don't see Transformers 4.
see Snowpiercer.
And in the future, don't see Pacific Rim 2.
Yes.
If you're still alive in 2017.
Yeah. We'll all be dead by then. I know I will.
All right. Shall we go to break?
Yes. On that note, we always go to break on me dying. So on that note, we'll be right back after these messages. And when we come back, we're going to have a game for you.
That's right.
This summer.
I wish we could stay here.
Cutprint Film presents.
I know that, Mr. Man.
Sometimes you have to be a high-riding bitch.
You like chocolate, Ben?
The Stephen King episode.
Get busy living, or get busy dying.
It's part of the summer series, the Cut Print Film Stephen King podcast.
Dirk Diggler demo.
Vocals up.
You got the touch. Take 7. Excuse me, Reed.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Man, Marky Mark's almost as good as me.
Man, he can cut a tune.
That song, that exact song, plays over the end credits of Transformers 4. No, it doesn't.
Transformers.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Dave! I never thought of that.
My God! But everybody on Twitter did.
Michael Bay obviously didn't, because he would have named it that if he had.
Yeah. All right, well, we got a game, right? What's this game called, Chris? Tell me about it.
This game is called Parent's Guide.
Help your parents around the house. There are many jobs you can do that will make things easier for father and mother.
It's Parent's Guide, the show that lets parents decide what their kids can and cannot watch.
Your parents will appreciate your help, just as Tommy's father and mother do.
Parents Guide.
Help your parents around the house.
It's starting again.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Parents Guide. So, for those who aren't aware, IMDb has this great section on their site called Parents Guide. And basically, every movie has a Parents Guide where someone submits everything offensive.
They're all some asshole.
No, these are all user submitted things that parents might find offensive.
Right. So it's not. It's not studio sanctioned or anything.
Oh, no. Some of these don't even have punctuation.
So, yeah. Basically, people on IMDb comment and they say what you would find offensive so that you wouldn't show your kids. So, the concept of Parents Guide is we're each going to read a movie's Parents Guide and we have to guess what movie it is.
Yes. And this is a great idea for a game. I can't wait to play and lose, as usual.
The only game I lost was the last one.
Who's our host this week?
Well,
we don't have a host. Uh-oh. I believe it's the host with the most, Beetlejuice.
Yes, Beetlejuice is the host, but he couldn't show up.
Hello, everybody. I'm Beetlejuice. Honk. Nice fucking model. Honk, honk.
Wow, Beetlejuice.
This is the Parents Guide. Parents Guide. The Parents Guide.
This is fun music.
What would a show be without Dave singing? Not a show I want to hear, that's for sure.
Right. I wouldn't do it.
A professional podcast, maybe? Okay, who wants to go first? Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, you go first.
All right, I will. Like I said, I'm Beetlejuice. let's see. Let me start with the easiest one here. Here we go. Here's your first Parents Guide entry.
Okay.
In front of his wife and children, a man says that if he doesn't get a particular job, he will kill himself. His wife reminds him not to talk that way in front of the kids.
Ooh. So do we guess after each clue?
How about you guess after the second clue?
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Give us another one.
Here's the second one.
That's hard.
An approximately six-year-old child, they're not sure, it's approximately, approximately six-year-old child falls into a pool and nearly drowns.
Oh, all right. So how old is this movie? Is it old? Is it new?
I'd say this is...
Is it in color or black and white?
It's in color.
Okay.
It's in color.
Dave, you got anything you want to ask?
Is it Problem Child?
No.
So the kid, he does fall in the pool.
Does he actually drown? I'd be laughing.
Nearly drowns.
They probably write that down if you actually drown.
Hey, you want your third clue?
Yeah, give us a third clue.
All right. A 10-year-old boy crashes a car through a building. The car knocks over a table full of needles, and the needles literally pierce the bad guy in the movie right in the stomach.
What the fuck?
Yeah, what is this? I feel like I would know what this is.
I'm going to take a guess. Is it Jumanji?
No.
Damn it.
You both are in the same
Why
area,
is there a
though.
Table full of needles?
Why not? That's what I say.
What?
They must be in my game room.
Like needles as in hypodermic needles or like sewing needles?
Hypodermic.
There's a bad guy in this
film?
Yes.
How novel. What kind of film has a bad guy in it?
Dave, do you have a guess?
Wait, is it a kid's movie?
Yeah, it is.
I'm thinking like Goonies, but no.
There's no needles in Goonies as far as I remember.
There should have been.
Yeah, the needles are me as I watch it and try and forget.
Is it Home Alone 3?
No.
Because I've never seen that.
Nope.
Okay.
You've seen this movie.
Oh.
Chris, give me a hint.
That's not fair.
You could have asked that too. All right, I give up.
All right, it's Beethoven.
Oh, my God. Where are the needles in Beethoven?
It's at the very end. The bad veterinarian gets needles in his stomach.
Oh, my God.
But they're pushed into his stomach by a car.
Is John Ritter in that?
No, Charles Grodin is. Yeah.
Same.
Pretty much the same guy.
Were they
one still alive.
Were they the needles that they used to put the dogs to sleep?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Does this guy die?
No.
How does he survive all those needles?
I don't know.
It's dog medicine. It's not for humans.
Okay. So that medicine, good to know. Good to know. Next time I'm at the vet and they prick me with one of those needles by accident.
All right. Who's next? It's 0-0-0.
All right. I'll go.
I said Beethoven, though.
No, you didn't.
You didn't hear me?
Nope.
For a while.
You are fibbing.
I'm going to edit it in later by myself.
Beethoven. All right. So, the first clue.
Clue.
I had a stroke in between that sentence. Don't laugh at me. So, first clue. Two men have sex in a car. They kiss passionately, and one man lies on his stomach. We see his pleasured facial expressions as it is implied off-screen that the other man has penetrated him. Wait, this is the best part of the sentence. Not explicit.
Oh, my God.
All right, so it's in a car.
And we've seen this.
I don't know if you've seen it. I hope you've seen it. If not, you need to fucking get on the ball.
Mm.
I feel like this would be on my shelf.
Well, two men having sex in a car? Not explicit? Sign me up.
Man.
All right, do you want me to do the next clue?
Yeah.
All right. A woman, possibly accidentally, exposes her bare breast to a man after a car accident.
Is this Cronenberg's Crash?
Jeff wins.
Yes.
That's not fair.
Let me just read the third clue, because it's really good.
Yeah, give it to me.
The subject matter in this film can be difficult to deal with and may disturb some people.
Is it the other Crash?
The sex scenes are also very explicit, and some people may find them hard to watch. The sex scene involving a woman using an open wound as a sexual orifice may shock and disturb viewers.
They're not sure.
May. You might be disturbed on that wound sex scene, but we're not sure. So that is David Cronenberg's excellent movie Crash, which is... Even to a guy like me who is rarely disturbed by things, is a very disturbing movie.
Yeah.
And Dave just threw up the chicken he ate.
He's been holding on to that for weeks.
I saw the outline of the chicken in his throat during
like
the whole show, and it just came out.
Dave's a pelican.
All right.
It's my turn.
The score is 1-0, everyone but Jeff.
I can't read and talk at the same time.
Oh, that's a problem.
A sadistic teenage girl offers herself to a man. She then stabs him in the abdomen and comments that she has penetrated him.
Oh my God. All right, go to the next one.
Yeah, I need another one.
Hold on.
and take your time.
I just love listening to this music. That's all I need.
A man's Achilles tendon is slashed, and he falls to the ground.
Is it Kill Bill?
Ah, is it? Yes.
Volume 1.
What was the third?
And what's the third clue?
It was about having sex with a comatose
woman. Uma Thurman's
woman.
Big feet take up the screen.
There's a gentleman named Buck, and he loves intercourse.
The plot of the film is to kill Bill. <It's> like,
a man named William is in peril. Oh boy.
Okay. Driving a car called the Pussy Wagon.
Oh, that would have killed. No. Oh, all right. Oh.
A man uses a comatose woman for sex, not shown.
Thank God.
Oh, I love the little footnotes they put in there.
Yeah. It's like, in case you were worried, they don't show the coma sex.
All right, ready? Here's my second one.
All right.
First clue. A prostitute attempts to seduce a young man. She grabs his crotch and pushes him onto a bed.
Attempts to seduce.
She opens his trousers and is obviously impressed at the size of his genitals. Footnote, no nudity.
Oh.
Is it big?
No. That's a good guess, though. No, it's not big.
They fuck some whoas in that movie?
Yes. Second.
Go to the second.
A man is punched in the face and falls back onto the ground, and another man is knocked out by a sandbag falling on his head.
I don't know what movie this is, but it sounds delightful.
It's all sound like children's movies. It's your turn, Chris. I'm just trying to keep guessing until the cows come home.
A sandbag falls on his head?
There's a knock at the door. Oh, it's a cow. What do you know?
I got nothing.
It's Clarabelle the cow.
Is it Little Rascals?
No, it is not. Right. There are no prostitutes in that.
What but, version did you guys see? Don't you remember the prostitute scene from Little Rascals?
I think you're thinking of Milk Money. All right, the third and final clue. A woman falls unconscious from a high swing and is caught before she hits the floor.
What the fuck?
Well, what does that even mean?
A high swing?
She falls from a high swing.
Is it Moulin Rouge?
It is Moulin Rouge.
Yes!
Very good. Nicely done.
Thanks, everyone. So is it 1-1?
No, you have two.
I have two?
One. Dave has nothing.
I'm the best. Okay. So the next one.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Did you guess Kill Bill?
Yeah.
Then I think...
you have two.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah, you have two.
Let's just all agree that I'm the best and move on. So... All right, next one. I'm going to read two at once because I realize this first one is really vague. Okay. Actually, I'm going to skip the first one.
No, read it anyway. All
right. The Lord's name is taken in vain three times or more.
I saw that in like almost every movie I looked at.
Or more. All right. And then the second clue is, there is one scene where a person is getting out of a car, and upon exiting, the name of Jesus Christ is taken in a clear and intentional manner.
What does that mean?
While exiting a car, they go, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, pretty much. Intentionally.
Can you read the first one again?
The Lord's name is taken in vain three times or more.
That's it?
Yeah.
Man, you're going to have to go right to... I have no guesses.
The ghost's daughter dies. Her spirit flies through the hospital and her head pops in and out of walls.
What?
The ghost's daughter dies.
The ghost's daughter.
All right, I'll give everyone a hint. We use this exact movie for a different game.
Is it Ghost Dad?
It is Ghost Dad.
Yes. This is the movie that just keeps on giving. For
Ghost
this
Dad, it never stops.
It's Ghost Hospital.
I was thinking like maybe The Frighteners, but
I just love the sentence, the ghost's daughter dies. That's probably my favorite sentence in literature.
Dave? You're up.
Let me get my...
Your Microsoft Zune fired up.
My glow paper.
Your mutant.
A boy reaches out to touch a woman's buttocks. She is bent over the dishwasher and wearing a bathrobe.
Bent over the dishwasher.
Is this problem child?
Is the dishwasher an actual man washing dishes that she's bent over?
A boy cuts his finger on a saw blade and blood drips on his finger and the blade.
Oh, is it the hit film Saw featuring the saw puppet?
No.
Is it The Good Son?
No.
Oh.
Is it Saw 2 featuring the Saw puppet?
All right, we're going to go through them all. Yeah. Might it be Saw 3?
Yeah, it could be featuring the Saw final puppet. Chapter.
Okay, give us that third.
Yeah, give us.
Blank is shown drinking many cans of beer, and he and young boy are shown to be intoxicated.
He and young boy.
Is this Sling Blade?
9.
Damn. Man, I...
Chris wants a hint.
Yeah, give us a hint. Give us a hint, love.
It's a children's movie.
Oh. What kind of shit is this?
Oh, I got it. Saw.
Featuring
the Saw puppet as Saw.
Oh, you want me to read one? Yeah. Give it away?
Yeah, you should probably give the answer, because none of us are going to get it.
A boy calls another boy penis breath.
Oh my god, I fucking should know what this is, and I can't remember. Because I love penis breath.
Yeah. Who the hell doesn't?
It's E.T. the extraterrestrial.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a Saw scene in that?
Yeah, remember? He cuts
remember the Saw puppet?
Ouch.
Ouch.
Yep. I somehow don't remember the Saw scene from E.T.
Dave, you have to get the next two to even tie it up.
I will.
Okay. I like that confidence.
All right, here's my first clue. A fully nude woman touches a man who has an orgasm. He's clothed.
American Pie.
No.
Damn it. A fully nude woman.
Fully nude. Do you see the tits and the butt? And
Yeah, you see.
All that other stuff.
The navel.
Yeah, the earlobe.
You have a guess, or you want me to just go right to two?
Fully nude. Read it again for me.
A fully nude woman touches a man who has an orgasm. He's fully clothed.
Yeah, keep going.
All right. There are a few scenes with full frontal female nudity. In one scene, a woman is crawling away from the camera, fully nude, spreading her buttock to reveal her vagina.
Her buttock.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This sounds like a dirty film.
Yeah, what is this? Right.
Is it Showgirls?
It is.
Damn it!
It is Showgirls.
Thanks, everyone.
And now the best I can do is tie it, right?
Read the third one, yeah.
I'm in it to make Jeff lose now.
The woman is in love with a music artist, and he takes her up to his room for sex. They kiss, and she thinks she is his new girl. She gets all worked up. Not to be rude, wet down between her legs.
What?
He didn't want to be rude, though.
Not to be rude, she thinks he's his new girl.
Yes.
All right.
Well, that was sweet of her.
Yeah.
All right. Here's mine. Two prostituting women are briefly...
What is the deal with prostitutes?
People don't like prostitutes.
We can't get enough. Yeah. Here at Cut Print Film, we pay for sex.
Two prostituting women are briefly shown in very revealing clothing at night at a NYC park. They ask the main character if he wants a bedtime story.
Is this Home Alone 2?
It is. Jesus, Jeff.
I know my Home Alone.
It's over. The game
now
is over.
Well,
I'm just going to read the other two clues because I wrote them down by hand. One character gets tangled up and stapled in sensitive places, like his nose. The same character gets electrocuted to the point of showing his skeleton. Dash. This is actually a rather disturbing scene for young viewers.
I like that he gets electrocuted to the point where, the way that's written, it makes it sound like he stops the movie and decides to just show the audience his skeleton. He just opens his skin and shows everyone his skeleton.
And then, alright, here is the third clue, which upset me because I don't remember it from the film. There is a mild joke referring to a boy seeing a man naked. The punchline has to do with a man... this is terribly written. I copied this, so this is how they wrote it. The punchline has to do a man genital area. Though since it is not directly said, children most likely won't understand it.
The only thing I can assume is it's that recorded scene from Angels with Filthy Souls 2.
I don't
or
remember.
Angels with Even Filthier Souls.
Is there a scene where Kevin sees a naked man in Home Alone 2?
I hope so.
This guy's
the director's cut.
Yeah, whoever wrote this saw the unrated director's cut where Kevin is constantly walking on naked
men. Oh, I know
men.
What it is. It's the scene where the hotel guy walks into the shower.
Yeah, and he's got the tape.
And he gets yelled
playing.
At. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, get out of here, you nosy little pervert, or I'm going to slap you silly, that one.
You may have seen my genitals.
I don't think that was a piece of dialogue from that film. All right, do you have your third round?
Yeah, go for it.
This could be a tiebreaker.
I almost had Home Alone as one of mine.
Well,
but then I went with
is it Home Alone?
Yeah.
No, I win.
Jeff wins. Bleep, bleep. All right. I'd fill in the music.
Yeah, we can't start without the music.
Jagoff is used many times.
Jagoff.
Is it the Jerky Boys movie? No?
Well, that movie is fantastic. Modern masterpiece.
I should have actually used that, because this probably has a lot of good parents' guides. Please.
We're going to need that next quiz.
Yeah, come on, Dave. This is called dead air. Yeah. We can't have it.
Two heavily injured men are stripped of their clothing. We see their undergarments.
Is Terminator?
Yeah.
Oh.
A character is a pimp, and we see a bikini-dressed woman walking about the house for a couple of seconds.
Is it Boogie Nights?
No.
Shit.
A character is a pimp.
This is a tough
taxi
one.
Taxi driver?
No.
Oh.
Is it Pimps Up, Hose Down, the documentary?
Isn't Ice-T in that?
I think he narrates it.
This one. Whoever can say the movie first wins.
You have to buzz in.
In a very violent scene at the end of the movie, two men are beaten up with steel baseball bats and buried alive.
Casino.
Sucker.
Chris wins.
All right. Chris wins another one.
Jagoff is used many times.
Many times.
Are you watching the for cables version?
No.
The TNT version?
Butthead is used many times.
This is what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps.
Yeah.
Well, that was a rousing game.
Parents' Guide.
I think that's a winner. I do want to play that again. Unlike the name game, which we shall never, ever mention again.
I didn't mind it that much.
No, I minded it.
Plus, maybe it's because I won that game.
That was
too.
My own creation, and I'm burying it like Victor Frankenstein.
I really liked the first game.
Needs to be destroyed.
I think the first game was our strongest one, but this was very funny.
Yeah, I liked it.
Let's just keep talking about our own podcast
on our podcast. Let's just keep sucking our own dicks.
Yeah, speaking of podcasts, we should plug some other podcasts, because we didn't do that in the beginning of the podcast.
Well, you're listening to us on morelikeradio.com.
That's right, and this is the Cut Print Film Podcast. You can also find us on cutprintfilm.com. And who are some of our friends?
You could go to antifanboy.com.
You already said that.
Oh.
Well, what the fuck?
They wanted another plug.
They slipped me a fiver before I came on the show to plug them twice.
By that, you mean five fingers.
They slipped me Fivel Goes West before I came on the show.
joystickjerks.com. They are a video game podcast, and they're fun. They're funny guys. It's a good podcast.
Yeah.
Hippo Juice.
Yes.
We never talk about Hippo Juice, but they're one of the podcasts on our network.
I'm drinking Hippo Juice right now.
That's right. And High Society Radio. We plugged them last week. We'll plug them this week. They're good.
And they'll never plug us.
No, they did plug us. They gave us a nice plug.
They'll never plug us, Jeff.
No.
Get that out of your head right now.
And congratulations to Jacob Roman.
Yes, our new writer. He just got newly married.
That's right.
Bunch of new stuff for him.
Sexy son of a bitch.
That's right.
Yeah. So, he probably doesn't listen to this at all, so we can say whatever we want.
Well, we'll have him on one time.
Yeah.
And we'll congratulate him in person.
Yeah, and then we'll punch him
over
in the face.
Phone, because he lives in Portland.
He lives at that. He lives in that base from The Thing, I believe, you know, in Antarctica.
Jacob is Portland-based, and he will not be on the show in person.
Yeah, we're going to have to get some kind of phone hookup for these guys to call in.
Yes.
And share the debauchery.
I guess
we're ready for the
Recommendations.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. So here's my Cutprint Film Weekly movie recommendation. Watch it, maybe.
Seamless.
Yeah. I love how that's just on cue.
Yeah.
It just works with the music.
Eat your heart out, girl who sang that song whose name I don't remember.
Wow.
Oh, I can't remember it.
All right, well, who's going first this week?
Good night, everyone.
I'll go first.
Please do, Dave.
Okay. So mine's a bit of a cheat. Not really. It's
fuck you.
Yeah, you're fired.
Has anyone ever heard of the ESPN series 30 for 30?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do short films.
Right.
Okay, this one's called Hillsborough. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
No.
Okay, so Hillsborough is a soccer stadium. It's the Liverpool soccer stadium.
Okay.
It's actually called Sheffield Wednesday, the stadium. Not that that matters. So,
all right, then. You're selling this really well. Yeah.
This is a 2-hour documentary about how in 1981, because of poor crowd control, 96 people were crushed to death stadium.
So it's about like soccer riots, basically.
No, it's not riots.
Oh.
It's just bad crowd management.
Oh, right.
And because, like, around the whole perimeter of this, like, the field are these tall, like, 6 feet metal fences.
Okay.
And in a soccer stadium, or back in the 80s, it was just standing room all around.
Okay.
So you would come in and kind of just, they would try to get, everyone would try to get behind the goal.
Yeah.
Because apparently that's the best place to be. And I didn't know this, at the middle of a soccer stadium, there's a divider, and the fans of the other team come in one side, and the fans of the opposing team, so they're never actually, because they would kill each other.
Right. Yeah.
But this has to do with all of the fans funneling in. They had newly installed these things called pens, which are dividers between the sections.
Oh, it sounds very humane already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pens is a good name.
Yeah.
So
they were called internment camps.
So people keep funneling in to this center pen. And then outside, there were just so many people from the poor crowd management that they decided to alleviate the pressure by opening this exit gate. And all of the people kind of, it's sick. There's, like, security footage of it. They all kind of, like, just slide in, like, hundreds and hundreds of people. It looks like a tide, kind of. They pour in and just...
How many people died? 96?
96.
That is unacceptable.
Did the game keep going? Like, no. did they realize people were dead, or did it, like, take a while?
They were playing the soccer game while people were dead.
So how long did it take before they realized that people were dead?
It's pretty immediate. They played like 6 minutes of the game.
Okay.
But there are people, like, you see them, just masses of people crunched up against a fence.
Jesus.
It's a brute.
God.
It's the most brutal thing I've ever watched.
Wow.
That sounds like that Who concert that everybody's heard about.
I think
it was in Chicago or Detroit.
But that was like four people, right?
Yeah, that was four.
This is 96.
Not 96.
Yeah, 96 is an insane amount of people to be crushed to death.
And so, if you've ever been to like a concert where there's pushing and shoving, you know how powerless you are when the tide of a crowd just forces you in one direction.
And that's what one guy's explaining it, and he's like, you kind of feel it, like, inhale the whole crowd, and you'd get pressed, and then it would kind of exhale, and you would alleviate it. But he said, and he was used to that from going to soccer games, and he said this got to the worst point he had ever felt, and then just kept pressing.
There was no relief.
And he just
saw, like a boa constrictor.
Yeah. He explains just seeing the light fading away because he passes out.
Jesus.
But so the movie's not actually just about that.
Okay.
It's about the cover up. Then the police try to say that it was because the fans were so drunk that this happened.
Huh.
That's offensive to people who've died.
Wow. Is this on HBO Go?
No. It's ESPN 30 for 30. I actually found it by just typing that in, and I eventually found a stream of it.
Oh, okay.
It's called Hillsborough.
Okay.
So I recommend that you watch that, because for documentary lovers, I mean, this is 3 weeks in a row that I've recommended a documentary, but this is something you should watch.
Yeah, that sounds really
It's not
good.
A sports movie, right, by any means.
Yeah, I think most of those 30 for 30s aren't really sports movies. Yeah. They're more human stories.
All right.
But there were, like, kids in the crowd and stuff. It's rough.
That's
so. I mean, the lesson of this movie is soccer is stupid.
That's right. Knock it off.
People should stop fucking talking about it on Twitter.
Yeah, I guess this is a good appropriate.
Yeah, it's good for the World Cup. Yeah. AKA, shut the fuck up and stop talking about the World Cup, everyone.
Whoa.
All right. Who's up next?
Gee, Cindy.
I'll go. My recommendation is a movie that actually just came out this week. It's
Transformers.
Yes, it's on demand, and it's in very select theaters. It is the film They Came Together from David Wayne and Michael Showalter.
Love that.
Is he one of the Wayne's brothers?
He's the lesser known white Wayne's brother.
The white Jewish Wayne's brother.
So, David Wayne and Michael Showalter, they made a film a while back called Wet Hot American Summer, which is sort of like a cult classic now. And when that movie came out, basically no one, I won't say no one, but the majority of people did not get it, and it bombed.
It was in and out.
Yeah.
In and out.
No one, because they specialize in very absurdist humor.
That's the perfect word for.
So they used to do a show on MTV called The State, and they also did this thing, it's called Stella, which...
Fantastic.
They used to do that basically in comedy clubs, and it briefly had a Comedy Central one season series.
Haven't they had like 40 shows together?
Well, that whole troop has...
Right, they've done a lot together.
Reno 911 is half of them.
Right, like the main three guys are Michael Showalter, David Wayne, and Michael Ian Black.
Yeah.
So David Wayne directed this film, and Michael Showalter and David Wayne wrote it. And they came together. It's basically a parody of romantic comedies, specifically movies like You've Got Mail, things like that.
And Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, things like that. And
does it feel like a parody? Or
is it? It's a parody, but it's... It's so absurd.
Is it like the Starving Games?
No. It's not like the new parodies of like, you know, the films like Blank Movie where it's characters just quoting lines from the movies and then
making a funny face and that's supposed to be hilarious.
It's like, Paris Hilton, you're here? Fart noise. Someone falls down. So this is a parody movie in the old school sense where it takes the plot of a different movie and riffs on it. And it stars Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, who are just delightful. And so it's hard to review this movie. I have a review going up this week, but it's hard to review this because from a cinematic standpoint, it's not a great movie.
It's more of a point and shoot.
Yeah, like David Wayne's direction is very point and shoot. He basically just frames his shot and lets the actors do the work. But from a comedy standpoint, this movie is just, I would call it nonstop hilarity. From beginning to end, I was laughing my ass off at this movie. Like, I would rather watch this than fucking 22 Jump Street and really pop. Like, this is the type of comedy that I prefer. It's just absurd and it's weird and it's over the top comedy. It's not for everyone, but it's great.
Is it reminiscent of like Airplane almost?
A little bit. It's that kind of style of parody where it's literally just joke. It's nonstop jokes where, and some of them don't connect. Some of them are duds, but there's so many that you can't help but just laugh. And there's just some insane stuff in this movie. And there's a cameo at the end. I'm not going to spoil who it is, but there's a cameo at the end that is just perfect. And it sort of just, it wraps up the movie perfectly. So I will highly recommend. Yeah, it's Hitler.
He's back. He's better than ever.
But it's not the real Hitler. It's the Hitler from the Wolfenstein games, where it's just his head on a robot. So I don't know how they did it, but they did it for They Came Together.
Hey. Wow.
Mein Führer.
Love that music.
Yeah, it's good. My pick for this week's recommendation is, I'm tying it back in with Transformers.
Thank God.
Yes, it's Transformers 4. this is a 2014. It came out in 2014, a couple months ago, and it's called Transformers the Premake. Have you guys heard of this?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I've definitely heard of it.
This is a 25-minute film made by directed by Kevin B. Lee, and it's what's referred to as a desktop documentary, which is a new style of filmmaking where everything that you're seeing takes place on this Kevin B. Lee's laptop desktop.
Okay.
So you're actually seeing his desktop, and it's edited together as if you're seeing him move the mouse.
So it's almost like a tutorial?
I guess it kind of looks like that, but it's very well done.
You see the mouse and everything?
You see the mouse. You see him open up all these videos and double-click, and then they all open and cascade, and then he plays one after the other.
That's kind of interesting.
It's fascinating, and it's so well done.
It's almost like a PowerPoint.
Yeah, but it's
kind of like a perfect reflection of, like, our time.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the world we live in now.
I mean, this style of filmmaking is a couple years old now. I've seen it a few times on YouTube, but this is the first time I've seen it used to this effect where, like, it just fits the whole narrative of the film. So basically, I'm going to use a synopsis that Stephen Boone over on RogerEbert.com wrote in his review. And he says, filmmaker, scholar, critic Kevin B. Lee uses the upcoming mega movie Transformers: Age of Extinction as a lens through which to view the present physical and economic reality as shaped by internet reality as determined by the economic bottom line. It's a love story. The lovebirds are we, the people, and the entertainment industry that so awkwardly courts us. But as a spectacle of personal yearnings exploited on a global scale, Lee's video is more thrilling than the previous four Transformers films combined.
Wow.
This is so good. Basically, it tells the whole point of this is all the videos that are shown are fan-made videos through their cell phones as Transformers 4 is being filmed
right
throughout the country and overseas in Japan or China. And Michael Bay, you see him a couple times, video of him. He just comes off as so unself-aware. But
no, Michael.
But so calculated as, like, and I'm not going to – this is no groundbreaking statement, but these movies are not art.
Right.
These are literally – garbage. Made
no,
these films are literally made with money in mind.
Yeah, they're a product, plain and simple.
There's like 150 videos, fan-made videos from the filming of this film in Detroit.
Right.
And Detroit has a Hollywood incentive program.
Right, because so Detroit is very dilapidated, yes. And they need money.
So if you film in Detroit, you get money back.
Right.
China also has an incentive program because they want Hollywood in mainland right. China.
Yeah.
And This film goes to great lengths to show just how calculated profits are
right.
in this Transformers franchise, especially this film.
That sounds fascinating.
It's so good. It's so interesting.
It's only 25 minutes long?
25 minutes long. I'm going to put it on the podcast page when I upload. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, there's a quote from The Dissolve that's like, Bay... I can't look at the screen and read it. He's talking about how he said on several occasions he would never make a Transformers 4.
Right.
And here we are with another 2.5 hour long commercial for
yes, this is
junk.
A commercial for garbage.
Yeah, there's I touch on this in my review. I basically say that Michael Bay clearly he has no emotional investment with this property. He doesn't care about the characters. He doesn't care about telling a story. He just wants to make money. And right. I know every filmmaker wants to make some amount of money with their films, but
that's all this film is. This is an exercise in capitalism.
That's literally all Michael Bay makes movies for at this point. It's just to make some money.
There's no art in this film at all.
It's
insulting. What's that?
There has to be a balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the discouraging part is that this is the first movie to have a $100 weekend this year.
$100 million.
$100 weekend would not. That would be a different kind of impressive.
That was Geely.
No, but you know what I mean? It's like people are voting for junk, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
Like they did with Obama.
I don't get it. Cause
Benghazi and so forth.
Because everyone talks about how they hate these movies, and they make money. And for the record, I did not pay for Transformers 4. I know you're not supposed to admit that, but I don't fucking care.
No, you panhandled for it.
Yeah,
you're in the you watch it in the Florida Panhandle.
Yeah, exactly.
So should there just be two kinds of movie theaters? Junk and then
that's actually
junk?
A really cool idea. I like that idea. Well, the junk theater and there kind of is that because there is quote unquote art house theaters. But
right, and it's like you said, Dave. There does have to be a balance. I cannot watch a movie that is 100% in the column of art because for the most part, there's no character art.
Right, yeah. You need a balance. You need a good sort of in-between.
Yeah, you're either watching a commercial for a product or you're watching that fucking plastic bag whip in the wind
Beauty. I think one of the best examples we have working today is Christopher Nolan, who makes a product, but he also makes it somewhat art.
He
finds that perfect sort of in-between. Right.
That are... that have that sense of art to them. Like and you can tell that there's love. There's love behind this.
And at the same time, you can tell he's also making a product. So he's one of those directors who can find that in-between zone. Mm-hmm. Whereas Michael Bay is just like, I want fucking money so I can buy another house.
Yeah.
So,
he's only briefly shown in this 25-minute film, but he does not come off well.
Like I heard that there's a scene where he rips a baby's head off and drinks the blood out of the baby.
He does. And then Robert Loggia comes in for some reason.
He's our janitor. Yeah, he's up around here. James Cameron gets a lot of flack.
Right.
But he's almost the anti-Michael Bay in that his all of his projects, even though they're very commercialized, they're passion projects.
Yeah, like I've noticed that in the recent years, especially after Avatar, people shit on James Cameron. And I'm not going to go out on the limb and say like James Cameron is a great filmmaker, but I just don't get the hate that much, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he is so
talented. Like, he knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
I just wish he would...
But in that vein, Michael Bay knows what he's doing, too.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Michael Bay, if he tries, he can turn in something at least watchable. But he doesn't care about
that. Has Michael Bay ever made a fantastic film?
I don't know about fantastic, but like early film, like I really like The Rock. I think that's an entertaining movie. I won't say it's great or good, but it's an entertaining movie.
There's more heart in that than there is Transformers.
Yeah, like there's that movie isn't filled with like product placement and bullshit. Like that's a movie that you can tell he sort of cared about. Yeah. Whereas these Transformer movies, he's just making them for money.
Yeah, but James Cameron has Aliens, which kind of rivals Terminator 2 as the best contemporary sci-fi movie. So it's like,
right. Well, they're in two different leagues. I'm not placing.
I don't know because they seem to be in that same class. Like with Jerry Bruckheimer, he's another one.
Right?
Is that his name?
Yeah. Well, he's not a director. He's a producer.
He more produces films.
Oh, okay.
He actually produces a lot of Michael Bay films.
He does, and he produced all the.
I thought he directed all the Pirates movies.
No, he produced them. That's Gore Verbinski directed the Pirates films.
Wow.
We've had words, Gore and I, yeah. Al Gore, that is. Well,
but yeah, so well,
it's about that time.
About that
Robert,
time.
You missed the spot.
Yeah, Robert Loge is coming in with his mop. Even though Dave has a rug in here, he mops it.
He does. He's just Robert. You're really destroying this carpet.
There's frost on the windows.
That's right.
It's Christmas insane. Eve.
There's frost in the windows. There's cocoa in our mugs.
We're almost in July.
The Yule log is burning.
I'm having a heat stroke. I'm sick, guys.
So what do we got next week, guys? What's coming up next week? It's a big thing. We've been teasing it all summer.
That's right. We've teased it silly.
Yeah.
And we put that on this feather duster.
We teased it to the point that now that it's happening, I'm a little disappointed.
Yes.
It's
we might just cancel
King.
It all
the
together.
The summer series begins.
The summer series begins with the Stephen King episode. And the week following that episode will be the Stephen King week on Cut Print Film.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to... it's going to be pretty much... almost 100% Stephen King related articles.
All King, all the time.
That's right.
We're going to have Stephen himself on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Not Stephen King, just a guy named Stephen.
It's Stephen Agnew. He's going to be here.
And then
we're going to give each other hickeys.
And then we'll give each other hickeys.
But not
where you think it would be.
After the Stephen King podcast is over, the summer series continues.
That's right. What do we got coming down the pipeline, Dave?
What else is up on store for the summer?
Hang on, let me get this plunger.
As we go into July.
What's in this pipe here?
The Cormac McCarthy podcast.
Holy shit.
That's going to be a riveting one. Yeah. We're going to discuss every book in deep detail.
And every film. So
I forgot about the films.
So, oh shit, there are movies?
So if you can't read, don't listen.
That's right.
I hope we're going to do a lot of articles about The Counselor, personally, because I can't get enough.
Do you have any tabs?
Well.
We'll see you next week.
That was the trio of wells.
The Dwell trio.
It's been a fun night. Pleasure having you.
That's right. Drive safely as you fall asleep on the way home from work.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
That's right. You can stay at my place. We have a pull-out sofa and clean sheets.
I'm coming over.
Right.
My sheets are dirty.
I've ironed all my clothing.
Yeah, Jeff ironed all his sheets tonight.
I watched Pacific Rim.
So what did we learn tonight? Dave, what did you learn on this episode?
That I can't play games because I didn't score a single
point.
That's
right. You did poor. It was a poor performance, and we're going to have an intervention later on in the week. Just Chris and I. You won't be invited.
Oh, okay.
Jeff,
a jack-off session.
Jeff, what did you learn tonight on the Cutprint Film Podcast?
Well, I learned what it means to be a an African-American. Wait, no, I'm sorry.
Wow.
I didn't learn that at all.
Good night and good luck, people. Live long and prosper.
I didn't learn anything. What'd you learn, Chris?
I learned that soccer is stupid, but I already knew that. But now I have a film confirming how stupid soccer is because it kills people.
Please go to cutprintfilm.com for more movie reviews, opinions, and original articles about the movies we love and hate. And be sure to subscribe to the Cut Print Film podcast on iTunes. I'm Moon Man, signing off until next time.